Vandals.
Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs at the Club, the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. As not always, but sometimes, I'm your host, Dallas Hammer, joined today by Mr. Martin Heemster. Martin, how's it going?
It's going good. It's Moscow weather, can't decide what it wants to be right now, but it's nice to be back on and talk some more Vandal football. Dallas, what are you doing with your left arm right now?
Twitching. I'm just so excited.
Like something else.
I'm realizing that on camera, it probably doesn't look great, but I'm actually just like double bass pedaling my feet at the moment. Man, what a really raging start to this episode. Brian, are you here to put us back on the right track?
Only thing I'm here for, man. Hey, Tom Kendall, Brian doors open, Marceau. Yes, hey. So, not important at all, guys. There is a dog with separation anxiety in my house right now. So, the door is open so that we don't get interrupted by separation anxiety. You may see an Easter egg on four legs walking in. It's part of the show. But otherwise, man, doing good. Hey, spring football is coming up. It's kind of a weird episode, but we have Tree Talks in the comment section saying they keeping this on the rails. And no, I don't believe in rails. I believe in, as previously referenced, tracks. But this, speaking of tracks, rails, this is going to be a bit of a roller coaster episode. So I'm ready to buckle up and get going.
Yeah. Speaking of Tree Talks, first thing we've got to cover, Brian, with Around the Bar brought to us by Hughes River Expedition, is a little bit of sad news about the football team. Trevin Pixley of the Lewiston Tribune / Moscow Pullman Daily News / you know, all the other places that the article kind of gets pieced and picked around. UI fundraising event canceled as a result of scuffle allegedly involving football players. The West Treasure Valley chapter of the VSF voted 17-1 in favor of canceling the fourth annual Vandal Summerfest event that was going to be held on June 6th. Estimated about $35,000 in donations. Marge Chipman, the chapter president, sent an email to the university about an incident that happened on February 10th, reporting 40 to 45 football players, some wearing ski masks and carrying broken PVC pipes, was the direct cause of the cancellation. This was a large fight that happened on February 10th between multiple people. Brian, what we have heard is that there was a football player that was kicked out of the party, and then this became a retaliatory attack.
Pause. No, like that's the little confusion. The you're right. This was a retaliatory. The February 10th thing was retaliatory, but it is what started this wasn't on February 10th. It was back on the weekend of February 2nd, February 3rd. What we've been told is a football player was forcibly kicked out of the party. Hey, we know we don't have the football player end on this, guys, but hey, this is the information we have to talk about. An event on February 2nd or 3rd, where a football player was removed from a party. And then it was the next week that the retaliation took place. We just want to bring this up. This was not like an organic thing where at a party, like, hey, people, we've been to parties, people drink, get out of hand. That's not what happened here. This is a week after an event took place, clear retaliation.
Yeah. So the email claimed that one of the defensive linemen sucker punched one of the kids at the door in the face, knocked him out, broke his nose, gave him a concussion. It just so happened that the victim's father was the biggest sponsor of this VSF event. And yeah, just not a great look here, Brian. There's one quote I want to get into at the end of this article, but I want to use that to transition out of this to talk about the next piece of today's show. So your thoughts, Brian, what do you know about this fundraising event being canceled?
Well, again, like you referenced, hey, a potentially $35,000 type of event. That fundraising for the VSF that's out the window. And the thing I want to bring up here is, look, the people quoted in the newspaper they're pretty hardcore and old school Vandals. Like this isn't like a terminally online Gen Z person getting touchy about it, which, hey, forgive me for bringing up generations. That's how this stuff works. We have a multi-generational show. But this isn't like a younger person who is being touchy about something they happen to disagree about and, you know, terminally online making a big deal. This isn't Tubbs at the Club, who, relative to most Vandals, we tend to be harsher on the admin than a lot of Vandals are comfortable being.
I think that's an understatement of the year, Brian, but continue.
Yeah, but I'm bringing that up because, hey, Marge Chipman, she's the chapter president of the West Treasure Valley Vandal Scholarship Fund chapter. She is universally known as old school hardcore Vandal. This is kind of person who, what I was told, like, hey, huge fan of Zach Kloss. And we talked about Zach Kloss forever on the show, but I bring that up as in, these are the kind of people who are patient with the Vandal program. These are not people who canceled an event over a drop down in classification. They kept the event going. This is not people who canceled the event angry about Paul Petrino not being fired just because of his record. They kept stuff going. This is not people who wanted to withhold money because of Zach Kloss doing what we know he did record-wise. They kept the event going. These people are pretty damn serious as Vandals. And if they're not only willing to have themselves named in a newspaper article and cancel the event, this is a big deal. Weezer is one of the types of towns in Idaho. And like these towns exist elsewhere. I lived in one in Central Washington, Prosser, where it's a smaller town. And yeah, they love their university, but there's a lot of pride of what Weezer, Idaho is for the people who have lived in Weezer a long time. And article brings this up directly, a quote reference saying, after this incident, none of us could see ourselves going out and asking for scholarships or selling tickets in light of this situation, not when one of our own was brutally attacked. Bring this up again. This is people who have been Vandals through thick and thin who are saying we're done. At least we're done with this for right now. Reason I bring that up, anytime you see stories in the paper about a fight or something like that, in the world we live in today, very easy for people to jump into camps and say, hey, it happened. Hey, none of this happened. It's all fake, whatever. The people of Weezer are dead serious that, hey, obviously this happened because police reports, the injuries were real, but they're so damn serious about this. They canceled an event that there's a ton of pride in Weezer itself that they raise as much money relative to the town being the size it is. This is not minor whatsoever. And from what I've been told too, the athletic department, though they did put out a press release after the event, the athletic department has done none of the relationship building stuff you would expect should be taking place, which is say every person I talked to about this, their immediate thought was, and hey, this is a colloquialism for a second, Dallas, but there's, hey, gotta go kiss some asses, gotta go mend some fences. No, the athletic department has, to what we have been told, the athletic department has not done that. So not only do we have the potential legal issues, not only do we have the loss of money, we also have what feels like another department being AWOL on a pretty damn big Vandal story.
Yeah, Brian, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to see again, just another time that the athletic department is just falling short. I've been around a handful of different athletic directors from my time in sports, and man, this is 101. Like Bill Chaves, the old Eastern athletic director, that dude was great about like getting his face out there and talking to everyone he could and trying to like, you're trying to build like people to like you and like your school and like your programs because you want their money. Like you need to be very almost two-faced in being an athletic administrator. You need to be so happy and so ass kissy at all times because you want people to keep the money keeps flowing. The sports keep succeeding. That's how this works. And it's funny to bring that up as Eastern because they've got their money issues. But Brian, to see Terry Golic yet again just not do anything about something that clearly falls under her jurisdiction is frustrating. The end of this article says, from again a quote from Marge Shipman, "We know there is an ongoing investigation, but if the volleyball incident is any indication of how long it will take, we don't hold out much hope for speed and decisive action. These kids must be held accountable. They don't only represent themselves, but thousands of Vandals who came before them, many of whom contribute their hard-earned money to provide for these student athletes' education." To me, Brian, that says it all. Like, I think this podcast has been the, other than the actual OC register breaking the news, we're the ones that are covering the volleyball thing harder than anybody else. But like, it's not just the Tubbs echo chamber that knows about volleyball. At this point, like you said, die hard Vandals are noticing, hey, something's wrong with this volleyball thing. This is not right. And here we are again. Why is Terry Golic not out in Weezer three times a week, shaking hands and kissing babies and doing the thing? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me, Brian. It feels like it's just yet another, we'll just drive over that speed bump and hope that we're going to be fine. It's just a lack of respect for Vandals to me.
Which it's clear that what Marge Chipman said about you, the quote you just read, that clearly has to be why that group voted. If it was a 17-1 vote, this wasn't any sort of split decision. And here's the thing. Whether you talk about a coach, an administrator, whatever, no one's good at every aspect. No one's great, let's say, at every aspect of the job. And there's no one in the world who's reasonable who believes a person can be. So, look, in coaches, sometimes coaches are great with the X's and O's. Sometimes they're fantastic recruiters and motivators, and that's what really gets them over the hump. But no one's perfect at everything. But whatever you're not good at, you got to be great at something else to make up for it. Otherwise, you don't justify your position. We've known forever, and anyone who's been around here for 4 seconds, Terry Golic's not a good people person. And that isn't meant as a put down. That's meant as a diagnostic statement. I have never met someone who said, "Man, I had a fantastic evening. I finally met Terry Golic." That's not her personality. She has always come across as a person who, yeah, she looks like she's a little aloof, whatever, but that she hangs her hat on being a technocrat, that she hangs her hat on what she believes to be competence, which is to say, that's the thing that Terry has to deliver, because she doesn't deliver on the relationship part. She absolutely does not deliver on the, hey, Vandals view themselves as a family. And the people in Weezer, they're some of the people who probably do view being a Vandal as being part of a family. They probably do view being from Weezer as this is more than just a town. So to connect with these people, she has to show action. She has to show she's on top of her game with handling the issue itself. I guarantee if we had the people from Weezer on the show, they'd say, look, we get there's an investigation and that has to conclude on the police end. And look, we get forever. Well, this isn't the first time a football player has been in a fight. Now, retaliatory is completely different in nature. It is of a different kind. It should be understood radically different. But a coach trying to handle as many disciplinary issues in-house as possible, not news at all. But what you do there, for people who are showing they're reasonable, which I think Marge Chipman's quote shows those are reasonable people. They're not asking for too much. You build the bridge. You show, like you said, you show up in Weezer. You spend time showing that you care and let them know, look, some of this is going to be dealt with in-house. Some of it's going to be legal, but believe me, there's going to be stuff happening. And I'm sure you'll know about some of it. Some of it, X probably going to want to keep quiet. That's his role. That's probably all they need, is for the university to show, hey, we not only do we know this matters, but we know it matters to you, people of Weezer. We know it matters to you, Marge Chipman. So we're going to spend time we're going to take our time and make sure we prove to you that this matters to us as well. By, like you said, showing up.
Yeah, I want to.
They don't do that.
No, they don't. I want to hit a couple things in the.
Wait, sorry, one last thing, which means if she's going to be terrible relationship wise, which she is, and then she's going to make everyone believe, hey, the place action goes to die is Terry Golic's office. What's she bringing to the table? This is to me her legacy now, is inaction if the event seems to matter, it's inaction. And you can guarantee when Marge Chipman and anyone else in Weezer is talking about timeline, they're not just saying, oh, like the OCRI investigation. They know the volleyball thing took multiple years. And that's what their understanding now is. Hey, Idaho didn't even say anything about volleyball until it became national news. That's what it took for them to get action. Well, we can't make this national news. They're not going to do anything. Our only choice is to take money away.
Yeah. I want to hit a couple things in the comment section real quick. Captain 58, TG has never cared about being liked. That's not a bad thing if the department is running right and the money's coming in, but this Weezer thing is proof positive that folks don't think it's working. I fully agree with that. Kevin Ridenour, Kevin, I never pronounced your last name right. I'm sorry. Vandal Giving Day is winding down. I wonder how badly TG's inaction affected fundraising. I haven't gone back to look to see how today went against the previous years, but again, it's certainly a valid question to ask because, again, we see Weezer pulling $35,000 of donations just because the athletic director and the athletic department doesn't take this seriously until they absolutely have to. I do want to address a couple other things very quickly. Tom Kendall saying, so many fights happened in my time at UI, including football players. It was a different time in the 80s. Nate Meek responding, same time, but we're in a different age now. The one caveat here, guys, is the PVC pipes is pretty, honestly, profanity alert for those who care. That's pretty fucked up. But it was this was retaliation considerably after that. If it happens at one party, a fight breaks out, like, hey, that happens. Retaliation up to a week later, that's where there becomes a problem. That's what I have the issue with. Captain 58 saying 40 dudes in masks with pipes, Tom. Fights, sure, but this is extra, as the kids say, and it doesn't look like TG handled it. That's the whole problem I've got here is, look, this is obviously out of line. If these facts are correct, that this was a retaliatory thing, and there's, again, let's say 20-ish guys and some of them have pipes. Yeah, that's pretty bad. But the fact that we're at this point and Weezer's pulling tens of thousands of dollars from the university because the athletic department hasn't cared, that's a huge, huge, huge problem, Brian.
No, it makes it clear, like we talked about with volleyball, Terry's got to go. Terry's got to go. If the game plan for dealing with problems, dealing with stuff that blows up in public, is silence, lack of connection, completely looking like you're AWOL. Terry has a six-figure contract around $200,000 of public money. She can't show up to Weezer. No, and references in the article. They clearly, the people of Weezer do not feel like the University of Idaho Athletic Administration is taking this seriously. How would they know? What would they know? Or what would let them know Idaho's taking it seriously? Like, simple outreach. Just showing up, spending some time, letting them know stuff we can't talk about. And I'm sorry, if we can't talk about it, we can't talk about it. But we're here for Vandals. And this is why on the show, this is why we prioritize Vandals supporting Vandals. It's best when we can support the institution itself and Vandals at the same time. Brain dead. That's how everyone wants this to work. But people of Weezer, what they're getting right now is nothing. They reasonably took this personal, and nothing. Come on, no. This is Terry's legacy to me. I don't care what bullshit press release gets read after she hopefully retires when that contract expires on July 31st, 2024. Not that I'm counting. This is it. This is the legacy. This is not Vandals. This is not Vandals protecting Vandals. This is not Vandals looking out for Vandals. We are not close to the only people who have had the experience of, Terry Golic run entity is certainly not familial at all. And that is honestly how a smaller regional based university like Idaho is. That's how you get energy. That's how you get people to show up. You need people to feel like this is a family, and that once you're in, you're just in. And Terry's not delivering there. So if she's not going to deliver on the other parts of the job relating to the public, what the hell's her point?
Exactly. Then what is she doing here? Man, just to sum it up as best as I can here with a couple comments from Tom Kendall. Weezer is a farming community, and UI is the ag school. Not a good look. And one step forward, two steps back. That's what this whole, honestly, administration has felt like, Brian. And the Terry Golic stink, it, to me, is starting to rub outside of the athletic department. It needs to go away right now.
If she hadn't hired Jason Eck, like, would there be a single person who would have anything positive? Like, Jason Eck's been an unequivocal home run. Jason Eck kicks ass. Not trying to pretend that doesn't exist. There's good stuff we're going to get to later in the show. Like, when I say legacy, we got multiples in one area. We got one happened to be a big thing, but we got one big thing down. It just needs to end. What's the point?
Brian, while we're talking about it, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Last week, you guys kind of brought me in my study break, and I just dropped some bombs yelling about how frustrated I was with the volleyball situation. I never really gave you a chance to give me your thoughts and feedback on Chris Gonzalez going on leave last week. I want to hear it from you as you're obviously getting some emotions out. Tell me what you think about the volleyball situation as it stands today.
Well, first you got an update on the situation as it stands today, Dallas. So we know that last week we talked about it. A provisional report is out, which players have had a chance to read. Players have also had a chance to have their own attorneys read. And the initial response from the report by Scott Reed referenced about four areas that the provisional report found Chris Gonzalez to be at fault with. The attorneys, according to what I've been told, from people very close to the situation, the attorneys representing some of the University of Idaho volleyball players, their attorneys agree. Like the report at this point clearly finds Chris Gonzalez at fault for numerous things. So the timeline we have, we're approaching. So after the provisional report's done, there's about 10 players and anyone named has 10 days to either rebuke what's in the report or to clarify what is attributed to them in the report. We are approaching that 10-day-ish mark. We're not yet there. After that 10 days or so is done, the final report has to be written, which you probably assume that's going to be another week-ish or so. And then that report gets to Scott Green. However, there is a second report that is still around 2 weeks out from being done, which is the part focusing on climate and culture, which that's a bit more expansive. There's a lot more that could potentially find Chris Gonzalez at fault for, but that part is not done. So between the update on the report targeting Chris Gonzalez and the finalized version of the climate and culture report, and then Scott Green having time to read through it, work with his attorneys, which you know that's there, and confirm next steps. This whole thing looks like it could be done in probably around the end of April is when we're looking at as a potential timeline. Keep in mind the spring football game is April 26th for those hoping this would have been done. I was one of those people hoping it'd be done. But the further update is with Chris Gonzalez on leave, now every eligible athlete is showing up to practice. So you're going from somewhere between varying times during the spring practice. There have been between 4 and 6 athletes showing up. We're now at around 10 or 11. So much more normal group. It's not complete because of transfers. And there's some players who are injured who have to sit out. But the moment Gonzalez is suspended, athletes are back in. The fact of Chris Gonzalez not being suspended was creating some division. Feels like it might be a strong term, but there's certainly some ways where the players who are showing up don't, and the players who are sitting out, they in some ways don't necessarily feel eye to eye. Please don't understand players showing up as support for Chris Gonzalez. The foreign players, many of them don't feel like they have an option because playing is why they're in the country. But then there's also players who may have injuries or other concerns about being able to transfer who feel like they need to be in shape and good standing for whatever happens next is part of why some people be showing up. But we're now Gonzalez is gone, the whole team shows up. So the response to that being it's wild how the athletes, hey, they've said in public and you know in private, hey, it looks like the investigation is saying, yeah, on a huge amount of what on the very least huge amount of the athletes reported, the investigation agrees. It was absolutely not okay and should never have happened. By the way, that would, if Chris Gonzalez was found, you know, to be at fault in 2023, we haven't read the report yet. We still need a copy, but probably was at fault in 2022 as well. So there you go. So the volleyball player has been right, as we on the show knew, for 2 years. Gonzalez is gone. Everyone shows up. This to me is the volleyball team being completely reasonable, showing themselves to be the adults in the room. And your question, the long answer now to your question of, hey, Gonzalez on admin leave, how do you feel? About damn time. Absolutely about damn time. This makes the fact of Gonzalez being pulled out now or the last week, and the players showing up, it just reinforces that every single person who paid attention to this and who listened to the athletes has been right for 2 years, and Gonzalez should have been gone the whole time. So look, we're, if he's found at fault in the initial reporting, I think it's safe to say, this isn't breaking news, but if he's found at fault in all this shit, there's no way his days are not numbered. So great news. But again, it's another example of AWOL admin of how was Gonzalez not put on admin leave? If you're in, hey, I teach, and one of the mindsets, one of the, you know, the North Star of decisions is what we're talking about, what we're doing, is it student centered, as in, is it about making things better, making things right for the students you work with? Waiting this long to put Gonzalez on leave, absolutely not student athlete centered. Not at all. This was admin centered. This was avoiding personal litigation centered. This was a big FU to the players who've been reporting for a long time that they had to wait this long for something to happen. And to bring full circle this week, Dallas, Marge Chipman in the Intrevens article referenced it. If this is the action you get, the whole, what everyone's understanding is the health of Vandal, the health and safety of Vandal athletes, the health safety of Vandal students certainly is not looking like the guidepost of what the athletic administration is making decisions based on.
Brian, I mean, just think about it this way. We are almost 30 minutes into this episode. A year ago, 2 years ago, this episode is entirely about spring football, and we're in a great mood because we're talking about Jason X, you know, first, second, now third season as the Vandal football coach. And instead, we're half an hour into this talking about all of the failures of the athletic department because the administration just continues to shoot themselves in the foot, just like they're trying to take their toes off one by one. Like it's a game or something. I just don't understand. Again, every single step here is just the wrong decision being made. It's almost applaudable, actually, to me at how just poorly handled everything has been throughout this tenure, Brian. I honestly, I mean, since you said it, you take out the hiring of Jason Eck, what really has Terry Golic done that's really brought a lot of good vibes here? She held on to Zach Kloss too long. There's, yeah, the beautiful new arena that, you know, Rob Spear had a very large hand in getting built over the handful of years, but the attendance there isn't incredible because there's not a lot of great basketball to watch there. She fired John Newley at maybe the worst possible time and really hamstrung the Amy regime. Like, again, I believe that the Amys are going to get this turned around, but you fire Newley either 3 weeks before you did, or you fire him a year later. Like it just, there's so many different things that from every level, Brian, this is just a mess. And I'm just ready for this to be over. I'm ready to stop I'm ready to stop talking about like all the bad things that are going on with the athletic department. This is just a constant at this point, and I'm sick of it. We should be halfway into an episode talking about spring football and, hey, is this the year Idaho starts contending for national championships? Or like we should be in an excited, like thrilled to be talking about spring football. And instead we're sitting here talking about the legal issues that are most likely going to come because the athletic director couldn't take care of one of her coaches. She hasn't cared to take care of an admittedly pretty rough situation with this football fight. It's just frustrating, Brian. It's frustrating to be a Vandal fan and watch, like, this is the state of this university right now.
Yeah, but okay, you get a six-figure contract for dealing with the rough things. You don't get a six-figure contract for because things are easy. The whole point of the compensation is because you are supposed to have advanced degrees, advanced knowledge of how to handle the things that matter. And last point for we, so we can shift and talk about spring football. I actually don't think the fight is that rough a thing for the administration. I really don't, because I think this feels like the easiest answer in the world. This is look, law enforcement was involved. We got to wait for law enforcement to finish their investigation. We know Jason X serious about discipline. Eli Cummins is just finally back on. He got kicked off the team, then had to redshirt for a year and be on good behavior. Like there are people doing their, there are people doing their jobs that, that you could easily lean on. But what you, the frustration for me, when I say this, this is not a tough one. These people are reasonable in Weezer. Explain what you can't do and then spend time showing that you care. Easiest thing in the world. Every single person I have talked to about this has said the exact same damn thing. Just show you give a damn and it's going to be fine. People will listen. But I guess that's too much to ask.
I mean, that sums up the entire Terry Golic regime to me, Brian. Just give a damn. That's all we've asked for years at this point, is to just give a damn. We haven't gotten it. Any final thoughts before we move on to, again, the supreme tonal shift here?
No, I'm appreciative that we have a natural bridge to move our tone up to.
I mean, are you sure it's a bridge, Brian? Because I was thinking, you know, maybe a kayak, you know, maybe a canoe. Because if you're looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, do not look past your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been vandal-owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or even the Selway. You could even check out special trips like one to see the Perseid Meteor Shower. Camp on pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife, soak in the beautiful natural hot springs. And again, like I'm always saying, guys, fish the most remote stretches of river in the entire United States. Just bring your clothes and HRE will handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them now at 406-540-4450 or check them out at HughesRiver.com. I do want to address a comment in the section here from Jason Mayer. Just throwing this out there. If TG knows now she's leaving, the easy thing to do is nothing. I mean, I would have a slight pushback and say that nothing seems to have been her default for the last couple of years. But Jason does raise a good point. If she knows she's out, who gives a shit? She hasn't given much of a shit most of these last few years. So just mail it in until July. Anyways,
I
mean, Brian,
I don't have any pushback. I just Steve Kurtz in the comments section saying good segue, and he's right. And I don't want to throw away this gift that Colin gave us anyway. So look, yes. co-signed, but ready for part two. Act two.
Let's talk about the stuff that, you know, we want to talk about on this podcast. I don't like doing that first half hour. This is the stuff that keeps me around on Tubbs, guys. It's time to talk Vandal Spring football. Producer Martin, you're hiding in the shadows, keeping the show running. I would like to have you out here for this. Thank you, sir. It's nice to see your bright, smiling face. You guys did a great job covering the quarterbacks and the defensive backs last episode. This episode, let's start things off with the heavies, the meat. Let's get into the defensive line. This is what we're all kind of expecting is going to be the strength of this team, because, again, that it was a pretty big strength last year, and most of those guys are back. Brian, Martin, who wants to start? Give me something to go with the defensive line.
So I guess the first thing I want to say is the D-line, complete opposite of what we talked about in the secondary with Trevin Pixley last week, which is if there's one pretty known quantity on this team or one position group that we can feel like we're pretty damn set with, it's the D-line. Phase one, there were some good producers last year, and mercifully, at least thus far, the D-line has not been picked apart by the transfer portal, which, full disclosure, was a complete surprise to me. And the fact that hasn't happened, I think, is, you know, hey, credit to the athletes who are bought in on being here. Credit to the coaching staff for creating a place where, you know, guys like Dallas Afalava probably had chances to go somewhere else, and at this point they have not yet. So both the players and coaches who created the atmosphere that brings back, of the 21 roster D linemen, 17 are returners, and the four new guys are freshmen. So, hey, no transfers. It's a ton of familiar faces who are coming back. And look, some of those key names We got Keyshawn James, newbie, who will be a redshirt junior, 38 tackles, 5 sacks, led the team in sacks. Dallas Afalava, as a reference, 26 tackles, 5 sacks last season. And Afalava, as the year progressed, really, really started to deliver and got better and better and better. Fact that we have him as young as we have him back is a, it's a, God damn it. It's just such a huge deal to me. And look, hey, we'll talk about some of the other players. Just want to reference those two big names. But Martin, look, you've been at practice. So I guess we're talking D-line. You've seen some scrimmage, not a full pad scrimmage.
Yeah.
You've seen some play. This was a strong group last year. Not necessarily like getting to the quarterback, but look, overall conference stats, Idaho's rush defense was number 3 in the conference. You're talking about yards per game. Yards per rush, they're towards the top. So this unit did produce for sure. And so much experience is coming back. What have you seen that experience deliver in what you've seen?
If and when we do talk about our defensive line, you're going to hear me mention this D word a lot called depth. They have depth this year. It seems like there's not going to be a huge drop off from like the first string to second string, like you might have seen with other positions last year. The name to kind of watch out for, on odd defense this year is one of the freshmen that came in early, Titus Springer. He's already getting rotations in with the second string defense. Patty, if you're listening, you want to correct me on that, but that's what I'm pretty sure that's what I saw at practice on last Saturday. Like, Jakari Larman isn't even he was getting reps with the twos last week. Granted, that might be because he's more run specialist, but there's a lot more depth to this team on defensive line this year, this time around.
Yeah, speaking of the depth, so the key departures for anybody that isn't super familiar with the roster so far, Tylan Coleman and Ben Bertram graduated out of the program. Tylan Coleman, 27 tackles and 4 sacks last year. Ben Bertram ended up not playing a ton, but had 19 tackles and a sack and a half. And then again, you've got Jakari Larman is still around. Amari Notice is still around. Sam Brown and Zach Krotzer have both had a bunch of time. I mean, honestly, when we're putting together this, we put together the key returners. Guys, there's 7 names we put on the key returners list for the defensive line. There's only 4 positions that line up there. Like, this is, to me, this is the depth of this program. And again, we know that defensive coaching staff has really shuffled around, but if Idaho is going to have to go on the same kind of run that they did last year, where there's multiple playoff games, multiple possible wins on the table in the playoffs, this is the squad that's got to be the ones getting it done. I would expect to see Keyshawn James, newbie, and Dallas Afalava probably both improve on their sack numbers, or at least maybe their pressure rate. Maybe it doesn't end up in full sacks. Maybe you see a little bit more of that from the rest of the guys that were only able to get a half sack or 1 sack this year. But to me, this has to be the strength of the defense. We know that the secondary is being rebuilt, as you guys talked about last week, with a bunch of new seniors in. Andrew Marshall's coming back and has looked very good. There's some other young guys in that secondary, but the way to help those guys out is for this defensive line to get after the quarterback. And again, there's so much depth here. It feels like this is one of those that you can just rotate guys in and out, and you're going to get that same level of production throughout the game. And that's going to be huge, especially towards the end of the season when we've seen it for years now. The Vandals lines just get beat up and bruised and taken apart by the end of the year.
Which I want to touch on the secondary for 1 second. I've been told that transfers Corey Thomas Jr. and KJ Trujillo are both pretty clearly the number 1 and 2 corners in practice so far. And that transfer Abraham Williams has been playing with the twos, which is say, hey, worth it for you guys to know. When I talked to Dan Jackson during a basketball game this year, he's pretty damn high on the transfers. Well, hey, they're already jumping to the top of the depth chart. Only bring that up, Dallas, because look, the secondary is where the unknown quantities are. It's good to hear who's emerging already, but honestly, to me, the unknown quantities on the D line, it's all great news. Like, Jakari Larman was pretty much an every down player for the majority of 2023, and Martin, which you referenced, is hey, with his size, he stereotypes as a little bit more of a run stopper. The fact that Sam Brown, who hey, Sam Brown was on team last year. He absolutely played a ton of meaningful snaps, 11 tackles, half a sack from Spokane, Washington. Sam Brown has been taking some of Jakari's old reps with the ones. The fact that the improvement has been significant enough from a guy with the program, Sam Brown for a while, to replace a guy who is a very strong producer in Larman. Larman's not hurt or anything. Sam Brown's just getting better. This is getting me pretty damn ecstatic. And the reason I bring it up is you guys talked about depth. We've known, and hey, X says this in interviews all the time, and X says this in interviews because he's correct. If you look at the most recent teams who are competing for FCS championships, their relative strengths are O-line and D-line. Obviously, if you're at that level, there's other things you do well, but it's pretty damn persistent. The teams that are advancing in the playoffs have the size up front on both sides of the ball. And in year three, X sure has shit so far. It looks like he's delivered on bringing athleticism and now depth to the D line. It's a huge, huge developmental step. More evidence of things working well on the defensive side of the ball. It's actually kind of wild to say with the asterisk. We all know, because we did this before, if there's an experienced group returning in spring ball, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that side is probably going to stand out in spring ball. And we just know that doesn't mean, hey, if there's some new dudes on the offense, expect they're going to look like they're a step behind in spring ball and just don't lose your shit. That's how this works. My understanding is, and hey, Trevin had a write-up in the paper as well. Seriously, guys, you should be following Trevin Pixley on Twitter for sure and read his stuff for Lewiston Tribune. But in the initial scrimmages, not full pads yet, the defense is what's standing out. Well, hey, that tracks last season, Idaho overall. I believe the defense was the relative strength. And with how much we have returning on the D-line, internal improvement seems like a reasonable thing to say, hey, this is how this defense takes the next steps. All the contributors stayed. They were all young underclassmen last year. As guys get older and mature, they get better. It's actually, honestly, it feels old school. Dallas coming off of basketball season where we already got 1,000 dudes in the portal that on the football team. No, like guys have stayed and gotten better. It's, I don't know what else to say other than I'm ecstatic to hear that the guys who come back are showing natural improvement enough that it's actually reshuffling a little bit of what lineups we see with the ones.
Well, I do want to quickly hit on Titus Ringor. Martin, you mentioned Titus Ringor, listed at 6'3", 276 pounds. He's a
big boy.
As a freshman, that is truly impressive. Brian, you talked about, you know, you got to have that size on the line to be a dominant program, at least in the FCS right now. And I'm scrolling through here looking at the defensive line, and he's already one of the bigger guys on the squad. Martin, very excited to hear how he progresses in the spring. Do you have anybody else on the defensive line that you wanted to give a shout out to that you've seen so far?
Not a lot. Like, I'm kind of also excited to see like Crotzer play a little more. He kind of showed up a little bit more towards the end of the season. Another one from, I can't remember the school in Spokane, but
Shadle Park.
I'm excited to see him. Like, I know KJN didn't play in the Friday practice I went to last week, but I'm kind of excited to see him continue to develop as well. Kind of play the bookends with like him and Malachi on each end is going to be, I hope, something to kind of terrorize the Big Sky quarterbacks for this next season.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you're new, KJN is short for Keyshawn James Newby, one of the edge rushers. But Martin, thanks for bringing that up. Zach Crotzer is another dude who I feel like emerged last year, especially towards the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And hey, local guy. I always like to see local guys produce. But the fact that we saw him look pretty damn good towards the close of the season, and he's part of depth on this team, that's fantastic. And one of the potential things Dan Jackson is going to have at his disposal is the ability to rotate a lot of ones and twos, keep guys fresh, not diminish chance of injuries, and not feel like you're taking a step back, which that was one of the things we did talk about on the show many times in years one and two, which is depth wasn't there because how could it be after year one and two? Well, we're starting to see the fruits of the recruitment, the development of this team. We're starting to see that in spring ball, and the D-line I front and center. If you want to look at Vandal football and say, hey, what is an example of something that is clearly going well? Which, hey, there's the finish in the final eight last year. There's a lot going well. D-line, top of that list.
Mm-hmm. The big thing for me is with the transfer portal, it's not like you're going to see guys like Dallas Afolava here for 4 years. I'd love to see him here for 4 years. I'm not holding my breath, and I would not recommend holding your breath on that. Even a guy like, again, KJN, there's every chance that he could be gone next year and take his senior year with an FBS squad and try to go to the NFL. Guys have that right now. They're welcome to do that. But you look at this defensive line, there's one senior on the roster. Jakari Larmon is the only senior at the moment on the entire defensive line of, again, 21 guys, I think, maybe 17 or 18 that are in spring practice, and then a handful of more guys that'll come in the fall. But you look at just the way that the roster is constructed. Yes, there's a bunch of, again, KJN's a junior. Amari Notice is a junior. Sam Brown's a junior. Zach Crotzer's a junior. Malachi Williams is a junior. Like, you got a bunch of guys that are towards the end of their careers, but you look at the depth, and it's just freshmen and sophomores everywhere, guys. This is what we talked about when very first spring practice happened. Was, hey, there's talent on the roster, but there's going to end up being a purge here. He's going to bring his guys in. What's that going to look like? Oh, I think you're seeing it again when we're talking about a true freshman coming in at 6'3", 276 in the spring, not even his freshman, his fall semester for his first year. He's here in the spring and he weighs 6'3", 276. That's insane. That's size. That's beef. As Jason Mayer says, Idaho beef. This is what we were all envisioning 2 years ago when we were talking about, man, can Jason Eck turn Idaho into the bully that we were hoping to see when they dropped down to the Big Sky? This is what we're talking about. This defensive line is huge, and there's so much youth here. Who knows? There are guys were we talking about Dallas Afolava last year as maybe being the best player on the
defensive line? Fun fact, Idaho player is saying, Keegan Henson is saying he's 300 right now.
There we go. That is truly insane. Thank you, Keegan. Inside information there. But guys, we weren't talking about Dallas Afolava a year ago being like the linchpin of the defensive line. There's so much youth here that there will be guys that are going to show up in the fall that we just don't know right now. It's a very exciting time for Vandal football because, again, we've seen where they're going, and it's pretty safe to assume that we know where they're headed to. Any final thoughts on the defensive line, gentlemen?
Not really. I mean, it's look, hey, all of these position groups, we're going to continue to watch and track their progress. But the theme I talked about last week with Trevin is, for the most part, being relaxed about spring ball, knowing that we've got a lot of guys who are known quantities, and some of the newer guys we feel pretty damn good about. Matthew Frazee says, Frisco, please be Frisco. God damn it. I would love to be able to go to Frisco so damn much. But anyway, I just love that. I mean, look, hey, like you referenced earlier, tonal shift for sure in the show. It's so damn nice to be able to be at spring football and just think about, and like the most reaction is about a ton of dudes are, the team looks great. A lot of stuff in the team looks great. And a lot of the areas that are question marks we're not that worried about. Like, hey, we'll talk about O-line. I think we should probably you think we should probably talk about O-line on a different show. Exactly.
Yeah, but with just the timing that it works out, I think I'd rather us focus on offensive line on the next show rather than try to cram it in here at the end and not give it the love it deserves.
Yeah. But I don't know. It is such a weird place to me to be a Vandal, and that, like, when we're talking the sport, I completely understand people now, like, always wishing it was September for getting ready for football season to start. Absolutely. So, hey, Tom Kendall saying, O-line deserves its own show. Agreed. That's also a younger group, and I don't mind having a larger sample size of practice to get observations from, because in the same way, hey, we said the D-line, ton of guys returning. Well, like there are a ton of O-line guys returning, but there's a difference in age of contributors, and that matters. But I guess I think before we close at Dallas, there's a couple basketball things we could hit on for a second. But before I shift that, Martin, anything you want to add to close out talking D-line?
No, I'm excited for everything. I'm excited for next week's show already, because that's like the one thing I decided to focus on next week. Focus on is offensive line. I know Patty's talked about it a lot in the Discord, hashtag patreon.com/tubsatheclub. You're going to hear a lot of offensive line talk, and it's deservedly so. Like, you're seeing a lot of stuff. Hi, doggy.
Thank you, Martin.
Wow. I just, I was so enthralled with the dog in the background sneezing that I had nowhere to take that. Brian, you're our resident basketball expert. I know that you're distracted by your dog, so I'm just filibustering randomly here.
Hashtag Bo Baldwin, Eastern Washington.
There we go. Bo Baldwin, new Eastern Washington basketball coach before he takes over the football program next year. Brian, you have some basketball news for us.
Well, it's the Big Sky. There's two level. There's some Idaho news, and then there's some Big Sky news. The Idaho news is Colton Mitchell transferred to University of Idaho from Idaho State. He averaged about 8 points a game at Idaho State, but his tape, he looks like he's a pretty dynamic guard. You would completely understand had that dude been in Moscow last year, I expect he would have started. And when you're at Idaho State, if you're a guard, keep in mind that system Ryan Looney runs is not guard friendly. So any stats you're looking at for a guard, add a few points, and that's probably what it would have been in Moscow. So that projects off my like moron math as over 10 points a game as a freshman, which we would have been ecstatic about. So stoked to have Colton Mitchell. He can shoot. He's a ball handler. So those couple things Idaho was missing this last year. Once the team's together, of course, but we're going to know what that matters. Where everyone's always, we're always excited when new recruits come in and then, hey, they materialize or they don't. There's a lot of reason to believe Colton Mitchell is going to be a good, meaningful addition to University of Idaho basketball. We'll see once we actually get to the season. There's, to our knowledge, two more scholarship spots left on the roster. Like Tom Kendall said, CDA guy too. Yep. Graduated from Lake City High School. My older brother graduated from Lake City High School. So yeah, if a local guy can contribute, kicks ass to have that dynamic on the team. The bigger news, and something that Dallas, I think there's probably more you're interested in going over, is David Riley, Eastern Washington head coach, just announced today, or yesterday, David Riley is taking over as head coach of Washington State. Riley spent 3 years at Eastern, built the program back up from the ashes after Shante Leggins left with all of the program that wasn't the Groves brothers, who went to Oklahoma that year. So he started from the ground up, first guy to get Eastern back-to-back 20 win seasons ever. So pretty damn good. Of course, the story in the Big Sky, it always circles back to, he did lose back-to-back in second round of the tournament, but Eastern's first game of the tournament back-to-back years. I don't know. He's coached for 3 years. So I wouldn't obsess too much about that at this point.
No, I wouldn't either. Again, first head coaching job after he's been at Eastern for what, like a decade plus at this point. I wouldn't be too worried about it. What I do find most interesting about it, Brian, is that they actually went to a different coach in the Big Sky first, and he supposedly turned them down.
He didn't supposedly turn them down. He did.
But there we go. Again, where I haven't heard anything specific, or we haven't seen him explicitly say, you know, he said the family and finish what we started. You know, I didn't want to put words in his mouth, but Matt Logie, the Montana State head coach, who I notoriously clamored for a couple different times during the Zach Kloss era, thinking, hey, why this guy was a great head coach in D3. He's a great head coach in D2. Why don't we give him a shot? That was who Wazoo targeted initially, and then he chose to take a long-term contract extension and raise with Montana State. Just an interesting situation with Washington State, Brian.
I have some slightly inside info on that. I was told by a reliable source who would have learned this more from the Montana State end that apparently David Riley bombed the interview. which is, and Matt Logie then did not bomb the interview, which is why Matt Logie, who objectively has a worse resume as a D1 coach, he has a great resume coaching elsewhere. He's a different kind of candidate than David Riley. Riley's coached in one place. Logie's coached multiple places. But last year, Montana State went 17-18, and he was the guy WSU initially went for. Apparently, Riley bombed the interview. And then when it didn't work out with a couple other candidates, including South Dakota State's head coach, that's when WSU went to Riley. But the Idaho end of that, of course, is David Riley is from the same coaching tree as Alex Pribble, the Jim Hayford coaching tree, which has served Eastern Washington quite well and has now been exhausted, to my knowledge. So question for Eastern is, hey, what direction are they going to go? But I bring that up from Idaho is, hey, look, if team for Idaho to move up, someone's got to fall and Idaho's got to rise. Eastern just became a candidate to potentially fall while Idaho has stability, and you gotta expect there's probably going to be some players leaving Eastern too. So that program, I wouldn't be shocked if that's on factory reset, which means, hey, there's another program. Suddenly Idaho might not be looking up to Eastern. Now Eastern has reliably replaced their head coaches for a while, ever since Jim Hayford, and done fine, but that tree's gone. So wherever they go to next is going to be a different version of starting over.
Yeah. I got nothing else to really add to that, Brian. We can hope and pray that Eastern is going to fall behind Idaho in the pecking order, but again, we need to see a pretty sizable jump out of year two of the Pribble era. Matthew Fries in the comment section, Verlin getting canned turned out to be a watershed moment in Vandal basketball history. I think that's why so many of us look forward to football coming back. I think this phenomenon predates Eck. Oh, it definitely does, Matthew. It definitely does. That last year of Verlin was real rough. And then again, four solid years of Zach Kloss, where we got close to 40 wins over that time. It's been a long time coming to get out of that Big Sky cellar, Brian.
6 years of losing basketball and 7 years without a Big Sky Conference tournament win. Vandals with only two Big Sky Conference tournament wins since returning to the Big Sky on the men's side in 2014, 2015, Matthew. So yeah, let's just say I'm co-signing the entirety of your comment. And with that said, man,
can Zach Kloss get back into the Big Sky?
That's the Martin story, man. Martin is the one who invented the Western Colorado Mountaineer Minute. Martin sits in the background, like not saying stuff for the most part. But hey, if you're a listener and you're thinking, why in God's name can these guys not stop? They cannot just let go of Zach Kloss. I let go of him a while back. There's someone who's involved in the structural production, maybe the producer of the show, who just won't let that go away. So Martin, hey, this is your story. Anything you want to add on the impending Eastern Washington men's basketball coaching search?
No, I just hope they go on the left track and everything falls off the rails for them. Go Vandals.
I think that's perfect to end it here, guys. As always, go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.